Vice President Lenny Robredo declines the COMELEC-sponsored panel interview of presidential bets and instead calls on rival Ferdinand Marcos Jr. to face her in a debate. COVID-19 patients will no longer be allowed to vote on Election Day. The camp of detained Senator Laila de Lima studying the filing of charges against those who implicated her in the illegal drug trade after a key witness against her recanted his testimony. We'll be speaking to the legal counsel of that witness, drug lord Kerwin Espinosa, later on in the program. And the Foreign Affairs Department honors the late Philippine Ambassador to China, Chito Santa Romana. We'll discuss his legacy with his friend, former CNN Beijing Bureau Chief Jaime Flor Cruz. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the midday news, presidential candidate Vice President Lenny Robredo is the latest to decline the pre-election interview organized by the Commission on Elections. The vice president instead challenges rival Ferdinand Marcos Jr. to a debate. Our correspondent Adrian Ayala now joins us with that story. Adrian, what more can you tell us?
Yes, Carmina, Vice President Lenny Robredo has invited former Senator Bongbong Marcos Jr. to a public debate. VP Lenny said this in a statement issued just this morning. Vice President Robredo said that they as candidates should subject themselves to public scrutiny, saying she is available if Marcos Jr. accepts this invite. She is available anytime, anywhere. It is also interesting to note that she only mentioned the name of former Senator Marcos Jr. and not any other presidential candidate. She said this in a statement where she also said that she is declining the panel interview hosted or organized by the Commission on Elections and the Kapisanan ng mga broadcaster ng Pilipinas. She noted that she has already done several panel interviews and also media interviews also with us who are covering her daily sortie. She has done a lot of interviews, and she also said that her supporters have already lined up all her sorties until Election Day. And in fact, here in Calamba City, she is expected to attend a grand rally later this afternoon up to evening at the Nuvali Open Field in Santa Rosa City. But just but before that, we are also expecting her to attend a multi-sectoral rally here in Canlubang in Calamba City. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Adrian Ayalin there joining us on the line. Take care, Adrian. Keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, vice presidential bet Rizalito David calls on his rival, Senator Francis Pangilinan, to drop his bid and give way for a Lenny Robredo and Tito Soto tandem. Our correspondent Sandra Ochona now joins us on the line with more. Sandra, go ahead.
Carmina, VP candidate Rizalito David has called on his fellow candidate, Senator Francis Pangilinan, to sacrifice himself and support a common vice presidential candidate to prevent a Marcos Duterte win in the 2022 elections. In a press conference, David said he believes a Robredo-Soto tandem is the best combination to upset a Marcos Duterte win. He also asked Pangilinan to give way and support Senate President Vicente Soto III. David also recounted how he was able to speak with other vice presidential candidates during the March 20 COMELEC debate, except Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte and Congressman Lito Atienza, who were not present during that time, and Senator Pangilinan. David said the rest of the VP candidates were open to support the common candidate, including Soto himself. He also adds if Pangilinan gives way, other candidates will soon follow. David has earlier announced that he is supporting rival VP candidate Soto, but he is not withdrawing from the race, fearing his votes will become stray and will be counted to other candidates. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Sandra Ochona there joining us on the line. Take care, Sandra. Keep safe. Individuals experiencing COVID symptoms will no longer be allowed to cast their ballots on Election Day. RG Cruz now joins us on the line to tell us more about this. RG, over to you.
Hi, Carmina. Good afternoon. COVID-19 patients isolated in their homes or medical facilities won't be allowed to vote on Election Day. This was confirmed by Commissioner George Irwin Garcia in a group chat with reporters earlier today. He cites Republic Act 113, J2 and existing guidelines from the Interagency Task Force on Emerging Infectious Diseases. He said that because of those two rules, RA11332 and IATF guidelines, those with confirmed those who are confirmed COVID patients cannot leave their homes or their medical facilities because of the rules. So, however, those who are who may have COVID but have not yet been confirmed and are not isolated and are already in the precincts, they can still vote. We also clarified later on in our group chat with the media that the COMELEC has no capability to bring ballots to the isolation facilities. But he also said that the rule is that all registered Filipino registered voters can vote. They can go to the precincts on the day of election, even if they have symptoms or symptoms of COVID-19. Even if they don't have any test results, whether antigen or RT-PCR, those are not needed for the exercising of the political right of voting. On Thursday, poll officials maintained that there is no way to delay the election, which the 1987 Constitution set for the second Monday of May this year, May 9, 2022.
All right, RG, since we have you on the line, any word or reaction from the COMELEC regarding what the Vice President stated just earlier this morning, that she is challenging presidential candidate Bongbong Marcos to a debate? Is the COMELEC even considering that, hosting a debate just between the two candidates?
There is no reaction or there is no answer from Commissioner Garcia yet. That was mentioned in our group chat, but he has not yet given a response. But I have here for you regarding the debate is that, of course, we know what happened over the fiasco that was the Filipinas 2022 debates. It is being called a fiasco by the Commissioner Ray Bulay, who is investigating the matter, and he is the head of the task force. And he did issue a statement earlier today saying that he recommended the release of COMELEC spokesperson James Jimenez and his deputy Francis Aguinda de Arabe as he pursues the investigation into what happened in that that fiasco that he calls. Carmina?
So the term that he used is relief and not temporary suspension as they investigate?
That was the exact wording of his statement. Let me quote. In the interest of service, Commissioner Bulay recommended that Directors James Jimenez and Francis Arabe be temporarily relieved from any functions involving media relations and exposure.
All right. And tell us about, you know, how these controversies, these setbacks is affecting the commission so close to Election Day, RG.
Well, so far as the members of the commission, specifically Commissioner George Garcia, who is our primary point of contact, has been for quite a while now. He said that this these controversies are not really affecting the preparations of the poll body for the elections because everything has been prepared already ahead of time.
All right. Our very own RG Cruz there joining us on the line. Take care, RG. Keep safe. Appreciate the report. Back here in the newsroom, Metro Manila will remain under COVID alert level 1 on election day. The metropolis and 90 other areas will be under the least stringent alert level until May 15th. Meanwhile, other provinces and cities were placed under alert level 2. These include Benguet, Nueva Vizcaya, Quezon Province, Antique, Bohol, Cebu, Negros Occidental and Oriental, and General Santos City. A self-confessed drug lord recants his accusations against detained re-electionist Senator Laila de Lima, saying he was only pressured to implicate the lawmaker in the narcotics trade. Mike Navalio reports.
Self-confessed drug lord Kerwin Espinosa was touted as one of the government's strongest witnesses against now-detained Senator Laila de Lima. Arrested in Abu Dhabi to much fanfare, he testified in the Senate in November and December 2016 about his supposed exploits with the senator, how he supposedly gave a total of 8 million pesos in drug payoffs to De Lima when she was still Justice Secretary through her bodyguard, Ronnie Dayan. More than 5 years later, Espinosa is taking back all his claims. In a counter-affidavit submitted to the Justice Department Thursday, Espinosa said all of his statements against De Lima during the Senate hearing or included in his sworn statements are not true. He categorically said he had no dealings with the senator, nor has he given her any money at any given time. He also said the false statements were a result of pressure, coercion, intimidation, and serious threats to his family and family members from the police, who allegedly instructed him to implicate De Lima. He went on to invoke the death of his father inside a jail cell in Albuera, Leyte on November 5, 2016 as among the reasons he invented the allegations. Mayor Rolando Espinosa Sr. was one of the narco-politicians tagged by President Duterte. He was shot dead, supposedly during a service of search warrant. For all his allegations, Espinosa apologized to De Lima. Espinosa submitted the counter-affidavit in response to a drug complaint filed against him by the National Bureau of Investigation based on his confessions before the Senate in 2016. His lawyer, Raymond Palad, attributes Espinosa's recantation to his removal from the Witness Protection Program, among other factors.
Nagugat to nung alisin na siya, i-request ng NBI sa DOJ na alisin na siya sa Witness Protection Program. And yung pagpayag ng DOJ na alisin siya sa WPP at yung pag-alis sa kanya sa custody ng NBI. Ayan ang isang nakikita kong factor. And then, pangalawa, kahit naman considered siya na state witness, no, under WPP, kahit minsan hindi siya ginamit as state witness, kapalit nung pag-discharge nung kaso sa kanya.
Various lawmakers and politicians called for De Lima's immediate release, including Vice Presidential candidate Walden Bello, calling De Lima a long-suffering victim of a frame-up based on President Rodrigo Duterte's vindictiveness. De Lima was among the vocal critics who initiated a Senate probe on Duterte's drug war. She has been detained for 5 years since her 2017 arrest on drug charges. But government lawyers were quick to downplay the latest twist in this half-a-decade-long saga. Prosecutor General Benedicto Malcontento said in a text message, this won't affect the two pending drug cases against De Lima since Espinosa was not used as a witness. A Muntinlupa court last year junked 1 of 3 drug cases against De Lima. Despite this, De Lima's lawyers are optimistic Espinosa's recantation will somehow influence the outcome of her pending cases.
But for us, this will now lay the pattern that many of the witnesses have been fabricating evidence and in fact being coerced only by the administration to cite these allegations against Senator Lili De Lima. We really hope now that all the witnesses will now master the same courage of Kerwin Espinosa, and we expect that soon justice and truth will prevail.
Mike Navalio, ABS-CBN News.
De Lima's camp now considering filing countercharges against those who coerced Espinosa to link her to the illegal drug trade. Her camp also believes Espinosa is recanting his statements against her because President Rodrigo Duterte is nearing the end of his term. For Senator De Lima, no less than President Duterte is behind her continued detention. De Lima accused the current administration of abusing the power of government to put her behind bars. But she says now that Duterte's term is coming to an end, the truth will finally set her free. Amnesty International also calling for the immediate release of Senator De Lima, the rights group says. Espinosa's retraction only proves that De Lima is a victim of political persecution. AI Philippines asserts De Lima should never have been jailed in the first place, adding those who are behind the so-called trumped-up cases should be held liable. As for Malacañang, it says Espinosa's recantation won't have any effect on the pending cases of Senator De Lima. The palace says that's because, according to the prosecutor general, Espinosa is not a state witness. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, U.S. President Joe Biden asks Congress for another $33 billion in aid for Ukraine. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. We're back. Here's Sue with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Vice President Lenny Robredo declines the COMELEC-sponsored panel interview of presidential bets and instead calls on rival Ferdinand Marcos Jr. to face her in a debate. COVID-19 patients will no longer be allowed to vote on Election Day. The camp of detained Senator Laila de Lima studying the filing of charges against those who implicated her in the illegal drug trade after a key witness against her recanted his testimony. And the Foreign Affairs Department honors the late Philippine Ambassador to China, Chito Santa Romana. Back with more news, the new Clarin Bridge in Lawai, Bohol is set to partially open next week following the deadly collapse of a decades-old bridge in the province. Jackie Manabat now joins us with details. Jackie, go ahead.
Carmina, divers have suspended their operations in trying to pull out the vehicles out of the Lobok River after the old Clarin Bridge collapsed last Wednesday or April 27. The Provincial Disaster Risk Management explains that they would need technical divers for this kind of operation. We are standing on the approach of the old bridge, and as you can see, there are floaters on the river. They are markers for the location of the vehicles. And one of the vehicles still submerged is the dump truck, which LGU said has counterflowed the one-way traffic on the bridge and pushing the bridge beyond its limited load capacity. As per the latest count of the local government unit, 4 died and 31 survived this tragic incident. The report submitted by DPWH late yesterday stated that the old bridge was among the heavily damaged bridges by the 7.2 magnitude earthquake that hit the province of Bohol in 2013. The agency also said that the bridge needed total replacement. DPWH in its report also stated that the local government unit of Lawai, Bohol refused the demolition of this old bridge, citing the historical and sentimental value of the structure. The agency then strengthened the old bridge by retrofitting and installing shoring on its supports to make it passable for motorists. And in 2018, DPWH started the construction of a new Clarin Bridge. It's a few meters from the new one, and this bridge will open next Wednesday. It's a week after the incident. Carmina, we have yet to get the statement or the side of the local government statement on the DPWH report. Meanwhile, DSWD is here to distribute financial aid to the survivors. They're distributing 10,000 pesos each to the survivors and 10,000 pesos each to the bereaved family, and they're also shouldering the costs of the funeral services. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Jackie Manabat there joining us live. Take care, Jackie, and keep safe. Russian airstrikes hit Kyiv during the visit of United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres. At least 10 were injured in the first such attack on the Ukrainian capital since mid-April. A UN spokesman says while the UN team was shaken, they were all safe. The airstrike took place less than an hour after Guterres and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky held a joint press conference some 3.5 kilometers from the point of impact. Ukraine's foreign minister is denouncing that attack as a heinous act of barbarism. Zelensky says the strike bears the efforts of Russian leadership to humiliate the UN and what the U.S. President Joe Biden asks Congress for $33 billion to support Ukraine in its war against Russia. The funding request includes over $20 billion for military assistance, as well as $8.5 billion in direct economic aid and $3 billion in humanitarian aid. Biden also proposed stripping Russian oligarchs of luxury assets to compensate for the harm caused by Moscow's aggression. The legislative package will also further criminalize efforts by oligarchs to hide their funds. The U.S. and its European allies have frozen more than $30 billion held by wealthy individuals with ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Biden also hit the Kremlin over its warning that a nuclear war is still in the realm of possibility.
No one should be making idle comments about the use of nuclear weapons or the possibility of the need to use that. It's irresponsible. Despite the disturbing rhetoric coming out of the Kremlin, The facts are plain for everybody to see. We're not attacking Russia. We're helping Ukraine defend itself against Russian aggression.
In other news, the Foreign Affairs Department held a necrological service to honor the life and legacy of the late Philippine ambassador to China, Chito Santa Romana. Our correspondent Willard Chang now joins us on the line with an update. Willard?
Hi, Casey. Friends and colleagues at the DFA of the late Philippine ambassador to China, Chito Santa Romana, took turns to pay tribute to him in a necrological service held at the DFA home office in Pasay. Leading the DFA in paying tribute was Foreign Affairs Secretary Teodoro Loxing Jr., who described him as the foremost expert on China and its people, noting the full military honors conferred upon the return of Santa Romana's remains. Loxing said, Santa Romana indeed died in the line of duty like a soldier who never failed to give his best until the day he died. His colleague at the embassy in Beijing, Deputy Chief of Mission and Consul General Dino Oblena, said, Santa Romana served as a shining beacon in navigating the complicated waters of Philippine-China relations, with Ambassador's mind full of intellect and pure intentions as he worked on upholding the national interest while keeping bilateral relations robust and narrowing differences between the two countries. There is a consensus among Santa Romana's colleagues that the late ambassador was humble, gracious, made them feel valued as he asked for their opinions and insights, was approachable, and a good listener. His friend of more than 50 years, Jaime Flora Cruz, former Beijing bureau chief of CNN, described Santa Romana as a consummate diplomat and public servant, but bigger than the sum of all his accomplishments, and was simply a good man, loyal to his country, family, people, and friends. Teresita Angsi, founding president of Kaisa para sa Kaunlaran, who worked with Santa Romana on various occasions, including at the Philippine Association for Chinese Studies, credited Santa Romana for helping her navigate the churning waters of Philippine-China relations. She recalled their time together engaging Chinese opinion and policymakers, and Santa Romana's contribution in anti-kidnapping efforts when Santa Romana and the embassy staff helped Angsi's group in helping kidnap victims who were Chinese nationals. Angsi said Santa Romana was, quote, the candle that burned itself to give light to others. Speaking on behalf of his family, the ambassador's son, Christopher, thanked the DFA for its support, saying his father would be pleased to hear his colleagues' memories. Chris said his father took pride in his role as ambassador and having played a role in building a bridge of friendship and cooperation between the Filipino and Chinese peoples despite differences, reciting Santa Romana's response sent to a friend on Good Friday for a book interview being made by Santa Romana's colleagues at the College Editors Guild of the Philippines. Santa Romana's remains arrived from China at William Moore Air Base on Wednesday afternoon with full military honors and received by Secretary Teodoro Loxin and his family, including his son Chris and sister Nenny. Santa Romana passed away on April 18 while undergoing a required 21-day quarantine in a hotel in Huangshan City in Anhui, China, before his return to Beijing after accompanying Secretary Loxin in an official meeting with the Chinese foreign minister. Santa Romana was a China hand for more than 50 years, having lived and worked in China for many years. An activist during the Marcos years, Santa Romana was visiting China and ended up an exile when martial law was declared. He served as China correspondent of ABC News for more than two decades, became a China consultant and special envoy to China of President Ramos. Santa Romana was appointed by President Duterte as ambassador to China in December 2016. From the DFA, Santa Romana's remains will be brought back to Heritage Park in Taguig, where a wake will be held today from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. and tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Casey, back to you.
Thanks a lot, Willard, for that report. And back here in the newsroom, joining us now to reflect on the life and legacy of late Ambassador Chito Santa Romana is his fellow student activist, former CNN Beijing Bureau Chief Jaime Flor Cruz. Mr. Flor Cruz is now an adjunct professor at the Peking University and a lecturer at the UP Asian Center. Mr. Flor Cruz, Jaime, thank you for joining us today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Carmina.
All right. First of all, I'm offering you my deepest condolences. I know that you and the ambassador share a brotherhood like no other. Tell us why the void that the ambassador leaves behind can never be filled.
He was the perfect ambassador to have in Beijing. But more than that, he was just a good person, a good man, a very loyal friend, but also loyal to his family, and of course to the country and the people. You know, since our active student activist days, our slogan has been "Serve the people," and I think Chito, our ambassador, did that even in his last days as our ambassador to China.
You know, you had the distinct privilege of seeing the ambassador's evolution from student activism to being a journalist to being a diplomat, and through it all, a patriot. What was he made of that his core was just so unwavering?
Maybe because he was surnamed Santa Romana, he's a saint. As a person, he is calm, even-keeled, very patient, but also very human. He treats everybody as equals. He's not judgmental, no biases. He can argue, can talk with even people who he disagree with. And that's the hallmark of a true diplomat, but also a true friend. He's very curious, curious about everything, including even entertainment news. He is not a good singer, but he loves singing. But most of all, he's a loving husband and a caring father to their two adult sons.
And he was very generous with his time, with sharing his experiences, with his wisdom. Tell us about that and how you benefited from this kind of generosity from the ambassador.
I've seen him talk with people, sometimes strangers. And yes, he will to talk to you, look at you in your eyes as if you're the most important person in the world. And he was like that to me, but also to many other people, his peers, his colleagues in the embassy, his colleagues in ABC News, everyone that who met him or worked with him have the same recollection. He was a sweet guy. He was a patient and very generous guy.
You know, much has been said about the Philippine-China relations, but under his watch, he was able to navigate and even nurture the complex relations between the two nations. How was he able to do that?
It helped that, like me, he lived in China for 40-plus years, dived deep into Mandarin and Chinese culture and Chinese history. So he knew China inside out. And so it helped him with his even temper, with his even-keeled personality. It helped him steer our relations with China, which, of course, is fraught with differences, but steered it along a calm and yet, you know, a calm course, and without giving up our sovereign rights, our territorial rights. So Chito did the impossible, which is to keep the relations on a healthy course, again, without giving up our national interests.
Take us back to your student activism days and your eventual exile in China. How did this period, did this chapter in your life shape your brotherhood and shape the ambassador as well?
We went to China originally for 3 weeks, and then suddenly, because of the political changes in the Philippines, we were stranded in China for much longer than the 3 weeks. Or as originally planned. And so coping with that loneliness and homesickness, Chito and I and Eric Bacolinao, the three of us bonded really like brothers. And we learned together. We encouraged each other. We kept telling each other, oh, we'll outlive the dictator. And we did. But it was not easy along the way. But I think also that made Chito such, it's like like a pearl who came out of the shell all through hardship, through trials. Tito came out the best that we could hope for as our top diplomat in Beijing.
And with history seemingly about to repeat itself, were you able to talk about that before he passed on?
Tito was very professional. We tried to extract from him his political stand. I know where he stands, but you know, he, as a professional diplomat, refrained from talking about it publicly. But of course, we know where he stands.
Foreign Affairs Secretary Teodoro Loxin Jr. calls him a hero. How would you call him? How would you best describe him?
He was best for me described as a dear friend, a loyal friend. I will remember our Sunday brunch over the past 20 plus years. We've always done that. Our families have become best of friends. Even our children have become best of friends. So for me, the best way to describe him is a dear friend. Tito will be sorely missed, but I'm glad that he ended his career on such a high note. And I'm glad the Foreign Ministry, the Department of Foreign Affairs, our Secretary Teddy Loxin, gave him the highest honors that Tito deserves.
What is the legacy that the ambassador leaves behind, and why must this be kept alive?
I think his legacy is humanity. He was curious. He was not naive. He knew the differences in cultures and history, even territorial disputes. But his legacy is serving as a bridge of understanding, of friendship, not as a kind of all, not really to solve everything, but his legacy is to give peace a chance, to give understanding a chance. And you do it day after day after day, patiently, as Tito has done the past 6 years for our country.
Jaime Flor Cruz, former Time Magazine correspondent and former CNN Beijing bureau chief, a brother to Ambassador Tito Santaromano. We appreciate you taking some time off to talk to us this afternoon. Again, our deepest condolences. Do take care and keep safe.
Thank you.
And from there, we're going to take a break. Still ahead, more Chinese cities conduct mass testing as the COVID outbreak in the country worsens. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. Back with more news and going back to our top story now, the recantation of self-confessed drug lord Kerwin Espinosa on his testimony linking detained Senator Laila de Lima to the narcotics trade rule. We are now joined by the legal counsel of Espinosa, Attorney Raymond Palad. Attorney Palad, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Ms. Carmina.
All right. So first off, I want to know, how long have you known that your client was actually forced to issue those lies, say those lies against Senator de Lima?
Actually, we discussed this issue around March 2022 when I told him that a new complaint was filed against him by the NBI based on his confession before the Senate in 2016. So he told me that he will tell the truth, that he was just coerced, pressured into admitting those things, because at the time his father was just killed, I think around 21 days before the Senate inquiry. So he decided to come out clean and put it in writing in his counter affidavit that was filed on April 28.
Why now?
Well, number one, in the cases filed against Kerwin, it is all in the prosecution stage. Witnesses are being presented against Kerwin in various courts. And up to February or early March 2022, this is still under the witness protection program of the government, where he is supposed to be utilized as a witness for the government and against several accused. But from 2018 to 2022, he was never presented as a witness. On the contrary, cases are being filed against him, I think around 8 or 9 cases, on the basis of his confession at the Senate in 2016. So he said na since he was already removed from the witness protection program and he will not be utilized anymore as a witness, he will not allow himself to be convicted based on his confession, which was, according to him, he was coerced in 2016.
Your client is a self-confessed drug lord. He knows deals. He makes deals. He even makes deals even inside prison. Why should the public believe the words of your client now? What can you tell the public to make the public believe that this is not just one of those deals, once again, just so your client can get what he wants? Because you said it yourself, this all happened because he was taken out of the WPP.
Yes, ma'am. Just like this, no? The testimony given before the Senate in 2016 is treated differently when you come to court. In fact, in one of the cases filed against him before RTC Makati, the court disregarded the transcript of the proceeding in 2016 because this Senate investigation or the transcripts are not easily admissible before the courts. So witnesses has to be presented and to verify the veracity of the admissions or confession at the Senate inquiry. So self-confessing before the Senate inquiry is very much different when you come to court. So as a result, no, in that case, in Makati, the judge dismissed the case even if there was confession as contained in the transcript during the Senate inquiry. So it's very much different when you come to court, ma'am.
Yeah, you haven't answered my question. Why should we believe your client's words as this time he is telling the truth?
Well, actually, the cases filed against him are based on his confession. So he would not want to be convicted on his confession, which was, according to him, he was forced to give. Imagine, his father was just killed 21 days before the Senate inquiry. He told me that there are threats, pressure from all from the police. That's why he was forced to tell these stories, even implicating Senator De Lima in the illegal drug trade.
Let's get into that
right now. So whether
or
not the pub...
Let's get into that right now. In his counter affidavit, your client said that he was only coerced, pressured, intimidated, and seriously threatened by police to make those allegations. So the question now is, upon whose orders, attorney?
Well, I went to counsel of Kerwin in 2016 or 2017, but he told me generally it's the police who were pressuring him into telling lies and to implicate people in the illegal drug trade at the Bilibid Penitentiary.
Who among?
But no names were given to me by Kerwin as of this time. Maybe in due time.
Do you find it important that he comes out with these names? It's a serious allegation, attorney.
Yes, it is important because remember that cases were filed against him on the basis solely of his confession before the Senate. So without this confession, I don't think the government has case against him. It is up to them to present evidence to prove this illegal drug trade. So he is now coming out with this statement because being outside of the witness protection program, he has to face these cases alone and without any protection from the government.
In 2016, then Justice Secretary Vitaliano Aguirre said that he was almost sure that your client was going to implicate Senator De Lima. He said he was confident. That was the word that he used then. Remember, there was even, you know, mention of a pink and blue notebook apparently containing the names of those that they are colluding with regard to the drug trade. Did the former secretary have any involvement in pressuring your client to come out with these allegations?
Honestly, I had no idea. No? As I said, I was not the lawyer then of Kerwin. I have not seen those blue books whatsoever, no? So I'm just relaying what was contained in the counter affidavit that was signed by Kerwin. Mm-hmm. As to the opinion of the secretary, I cannot comment on that.
Tell me something, though, Attorney Palad. Was your client the only one pressured to come out with these allegations? What has your client told you?
Well, I can only speak for Kerwin Espinosa about being pressured into testifying at the Senate that time. We have other witnesses appearing in court, but we cannot discuss the same because it would be sub judice since there are cases pending in court. I can only speak right now about the counter-affidavit since the case is only at the prosecution stage before the Department of Justice, investigation stage rather.
So let's get into that. Prosecutor General Benedicto Malcontento's assertion is that the recantation will not have any effect at all on the DOJ's case against De Lima, as he is not a witness for the prosecution. He is not a state witness. You also heard from the palace about this, echoing the prosecutor's call. Will it have any impact at all on the case? What do you think about it? And will it have a subsequent impact on the other witnesses as well? Attorney.
Well, Prosecutor General Malcontento is correct in saying that the contents of the counter-affidavit will not affect the two pending cases against Senator De Lima, because Kerwin was never presented as a witness in the three courts initially, no, at the Muntinlupa. So he cannot recant something before the court because he was never presented as a witness. There are several persons deprived of liberties testifying before the Muntinlupa courts against Senator De Lima and other accused, and that excludes Kerwin Espinosa. So this recantation has something to do with the confession at the Senate and not before the courts. Mm. So the DOJ, Prosecutor Malcontento is correct.
However, do you agree that his recantation sort of unveils the truth, that these were, in fact, trumped-up charges against the senator?
Well, as I said, no, based on the confession of Kerwin, no case was filed against De Lima where Kerwin will be the primary witness against the senator. The pending cases against senator were filed using other witnesses, PDLs, no, at the Muntinlupa and not Kerwin. Mm. So no case was filed yet on the basis of Kerwin's confession against De Lima.
What do you say then? Yeah, what do you say then to those who have the opinion that if this happened then, that if your client was coerced to make these allegations, then this could have possibly happened as well with the other witnesses?
Well, that's our opinion among defense counsel, that some witnesses who are also detained at the NBP were coerced into testifying, making statements. But that's only the opinion of the defense counsel, no? Because we are still on trial, and these detained witnesses are still being subject for direct and cross-examination. Mm.
Are you preparing for eventual charges to be filed against your client? We heard that Senator De Lima's office is also studying the matter. What are your thoughts regarding that?
Well, from the confession in 2016 at the Senate hearing, cases have been filed against Kerwin. I think if I count it, around more or less 10 cases filed by the government against Kerwin and some people. So we expect cases to be filed, no, as a result of his confession, where the government wants to convict him based on his confession. As to the move of the legal counsel of Senator De Lima, I would not comment on there. Take on this counter-affidavit of Kerwin.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Attorney yeah. Raymond Palad, legal counsel of drug lord Kerwin Espinosa, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate you coming to
thank
the
you
show.
Also.
Take care.
Thank you, Ms. Carmina. Thank you. Bye-bye.
More Chinese cities conduct mass testing as the virus sweeps the country. The mega city of Guangzhou began testing some 5.6 million people over one suspected COVID case. The city government also canceled hundreds of flights. The tech hub of Hangzhou, which is located near lockdown Shanghai, has also ordered 9.4 million people to get tested every 48 hours to gain access to public transport. China reported over 11,000 new infections Thursday, rattling its zero COVID strategy. In sports, the Philadelphia 76ers have reached the NBA's Eastern Conference semifinals. Their all-star center, Joel Embiid, made sure of that. The MVP finalist scored 33 points and grabbed 10 rebounds as the 76ers routed the Toronto Raptors 132-97 in their series clincher. Their next opponent will be the top-seeded Miami Heat. And before we go, a new report by Google shows Southeast Asians are highly likely to go on so-called revenge travel. Citing their own data in the past month, Google Asia Pacific says search interests on where to travel ballooned to 336% in Southeast Asia. The top destinations searched by users in the Philippines for outbound international travel include Singapore, Dubai, and Los Angeles. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for keeping us company the whole week this week. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to visit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.